This is July 13th, 1980, Eugene, Oregon, and we're having a session with Bartholomew.
Good evening.
Good evening. We were wondering if we could begin with some comments on what it means to be an adept.
All right. It is something I rarely talk about, but nevertheless, it is an actuality that although mankind says all men are created equal, that may be true in some realms, but it is not true in the spiritual realm, only because some people work harder than others, not because of some divine decree. So therefore, those who have pursued rigorously the path for truth in whatever way that they find it meaningful come to a point where I would consider them an adept, which means that they have sloughed off enough of the arrogance of separated ego to be able to enfold within their being a certain amount of what I would call divine light in order to open up certain areas of awareness that are not ordinarily open to a human entity. And that person is an adept. At that person's time, they must be willing to assume the power and responsibility of wielding such power. And it is not something that can be done capriciously and something that must be terribly and utterly responsibly dealt with. And that is the meaning of an adept.
The next question has to do with
depression.
And do you have any recommendations for invoking something to counteract that?
I think the whole question of, as you were discussing earlier, how to stand, what you do before the power has taken over your life and you are in a state of calm, detached awareness, there is always confusion. It is just like the person who has decided once and for all, I will never take a drug again, I will not take marijuana, I will not take what are the names of these, or whatever. I've renounced that way of approaching the Godhead. I have decided to go it only through meditation and deep realization. And then there is that dry, dry desert that stands in between. All right, well, so it is when you have decided to leave behind the turmoil and the periphery of life and are moving toward the center. There is that space between periphery and center that has to be crossed. And that is the area that I would like to address. The most helpful thing, I think, ever for helping one to overcome moments of utter jealousy, desperation, despondency, whatever it might be, is at the instant that you feel this energy is one with you, you feel it coming into you, it is there with you. There is no trick, no gimmick that's going to push a button and have it explode, and you're stuck with it, if we could put it that way. At that moment, the most helpful thing that I think you can do is to, one, acknowledge and say, the feeling is present. To deny that it is there is to begin to play a whole series of games that are not worthy of your higher self. So the first thing to do is to say in your mind, I am experiencing a feeling of, and then state whatever it is. Now, the minute you have done the stating, you are stating something. You are stating, one, there is a feeling, and two, you are not that feeling. It is something that is happening to you, and you are not it. And if you can continually do this, you will begin to get what I call a spatial awareness of the fact that there is that chaos. Oh, yes, so it's there. But since you are saying, I am recognizing it, you have created a distance between the two. And I think that first and foremost, if you can do this, you are going to be better off. And then the second one is more difficult, but I really do feel it is the only way. And that is, you must embrace that emotion. If you start trying to play games and say, oh no, I will not be angry. Oh no, I am too wondrously spiritually pure to be angry, and besides, my mother said you should never be angry, whatever it is you might be saying in your mind, the fact remains, anger is present in your aura. Face it, anger is present. All right, now when you embrace that, and I mean with a loving, compassionate embrace, it's going to change everything. But if you start pushing and saying, I will not be depressed. I'm going to run around the block 18 times. I will not be depressed. I will not. I'm going to do whatever it is one does, whatever tricks that one goes through in order to push away from depression. What you do is you push it away, but it lurks on the periphery. And then, lo and behold, you take a nap in the afternoon and you wake up and you are so depressed that then it is a maximum effort to even rise up off of the sofa. Are you familiar with this phenomenon? So, the answer that I see is first, take it seriously. By that I mean, sit down as you would any other thing in your life and say, ah, we have a condition here. If something's wrong with your car, you take it seriously. You just don't pretend it's not there and just keep trying to drive it and not go anywhere. You say, ah, there's a problem. We're going to take care of it. You go and do whatever has to be done. By the same rationalization, I think we have to deal with these moments of difficulty. And you sit yourself down and you say, you face it. You are sitting here and there is present within your aura a difficulty. Look at it. What is it? Look at it. The problem is you don't look at them long enough. You say, oh my God, it's ugly, and you shove it away. And if you're very fortunate, you'll throw it at somebody else. That's the best human technique. You just pick it up and you say, oh goody, here we go. And you just, and it lands on somebody else. All right, no good. No good, my friend. That's not playing fair. It's your problem. You deal with it. And the other way, truly, if you will once understand that an emotion of any kind of negativity is something that moves through you and does not have to run you, then you are beginning to free it up. And the only way that you can do that is to sit yourself down very quietly and say, all right, here's the problem. Let us say it is what? Name it. Depression? Is that a good one? All right, let's deal with depression. If you're watching depression closely, it is a very interesting phenomenon, and it doesn't come on you all of a sudden. Depression usually starts tracing. There are traces of it coming, tracing, tracing. And then 1 hour of the day, you feel a little more depressed, and then you start dwelling on it, and the thought form gets larger and larger and larger, and pretty soon you have a large room full of depression, and you're sitting there in the midst of it. Now, my advice is, if you are paying attention to your responses, you're going to be in on it early on. You're going to start when the tracings just begin. If you're paying attention and not out there flying around the periphery, you're going to be in here and you're going to say, ah, I feel it. There is a, whatever it is, a negative, if we could use that word, a negative energy field is entering and is beginning to stir things up. And don't just say, I'm ignoring it. I'm going to get very busy. Because it will linger. It will linger. So, it isn't a problem. All it is energy in motion. That's all it is. What makes it a problem is you taking it and harboring it and holding it close to your heart and saying, I don't understand it. I'm not going to look at it. It's not really here. Do you understand? When you sit down, it is like with any problem in your life. Address it. Address it. Sit down and say, there is a problem. I am depressed. All right? If you begin, and this is a very strange phenomenon, but it happens to be true, if you begin to really embrace a feeling of jealousy, a feeling of anger, a feeling of hate, a feeling of depression, if you will really allow that energy to move within you and embrace it as part of the oneness instead of trying to send it into the ethers away from you, separated and away, when you begin to embrace it, it takes on a sweetness that I cannot talk about. You will simply have to feel it. There is no emotion in this createdness that cannot be sweet if you will embrace it. And if you doubt me, you have to begin to embrace it. There is nothing in the createdness that is not a part of the one. Therefore, there is nothing ever that is not sweet and tasty of the divine essence. It is simply that your fear of what it has been in the past overwhelms you to such an extent that you start to push away. No, no, get out of my life. No, my friends, it isn't going to work. Embrace it. So what? So you're depressed. Does that matter so terribly much? So today you're depressed. Does it really matter so terribly much? What you're saying is, I refuse to be depressed. I must be happy. I must always be happy. I must never have any negativity ever enter my life. My friends, the human condition does not allow for that. So be a human. Be depressed. But be aware in your depression and everything changes. Depression does not have to run you when you are the observer of that depression. When the space is made, when you say depression is present, but there is also that which is observing the depression, everything changes. Identify with the depression and you are lost down the hole. But if you identify with that which is observing that, everything is going to change. The same thing with anger. If you say, I am anger, then you are stuck. Yes, you're anger, and you will have to go through the ritual of what anger does. On the other hand, if you say anger is present, and you are the observer that is observing the anger, and this isn't hard to do. Just be the observer. Anger is present. Fine. Anger is present. The problem is, my friend, you're addicted to the good feelings, and you're adverse to the bad feelings. That is the whole truth of it. And that is how you play all of your games. That which you like, you pull to you. That which you don't like, you push away. You will never become free with this kind of manipulation. You have to say, give it all to me. I don't care. Give it all to me. So what? If some brother or sister in the world is suffering this, why not me? Why should I be the special one? Why not? And all of a sudden, when you begin to identify with the universality of the human condition, you embrace them all, then no longer do you have to fight against anything. What is there to fight about? Why should you be any different? The human condition suffers, so suffer. The human condition is jealous, so be jealous. It has depression. It has strange feelings. It has weird perceptions. So what? So what? So what? Who has said that you had to feel always optimistic, high, happy, and with a big smile on your face? Who has said that? Who has said that this wonderful smile is the answer to all your problems? I do not see that as the answer to your problems. The answer to your problems is that there is nothing that you cannot embrace. You will become one with your brothers and sisters by embracing the situation, and you will alienate yourself from their condition by pushing it away, and that is a fact. Everybody says, I want to be one, I want to be one. But what they're saying is, I want to be one with the goodies, and I want no part of the uglies. And that is not the way the law is done. The law says you embrace it all. And in your embracer of that, you have identified totally and utterly with what? The oneness. And out of the power of knowing your embracing of the oneness comes the distance. But as long as you are running away from an entire set of emotions and an entire set of reactions, you are alienating yourself from a vast part of the human condition, which means a vast part of your own self. If you have set up your life that you will only feel that which is beautiful and that which is lofty, very good. Then just be prepared to have another round. Be aware of that until you say, I will take it all. I will take the dark, I will take the light, the up and the down, the good and the evil. I will embrace it all. When I feel it, I will be a part of that because I identify with the universality of oneness. It's changed everything because now you are receptive of compassion. Do you understand? If you stand outside of that kind of condition, how are you going to have compassion? Someone comes to you, they throw themselves at your feet and say, I am absolutely abject. Depression is taking my life. Help me. And if you have never embraced compassion, embrace that feeling, how are you going to reach out? If you are above that condition, how are you going to reach out? But when you have taken it in, and it is no longer an antagonist, but a lover of yours, you can just simply pick them up and hold them in your lap. Because that is part of you now. You have embraced that. That is part of you now. And then you stand as able to help. Otherwise, who are you? Can you really go to someone so lofty that they cannot identify with the difficulties of your life? Can you go to them and say, here is my heart. Look at my ugly situation. What are they going to say? Oh, my dear, I really don't think you should feel that way. After all, it's written in the Bible that thou shalt not feel that way. So therefore, you should not feel that way. And you're saying, I don't care. I feel it. I am aching. Can't you help? Oh, my dear, I'm sure if you just pray about it long enough, it's going to work. Nonsense. To the extent to which you have embraced your own human condition is the extent to which you can embrace other people in loving compassion, and thereby do some good on this earth. Put yourself above them, my friends, and they will not come to you. How can they come to somebody so lofty and spiritual that they cannot relate to the basic things such as anger? If somebody says to me, I never feel anger, I say, oh, yes, you do. When are you going to face it? I have never felt any anger. And that's just the way the voice sounds to me. It always goes up an octave, and it always starts that way. In my hearing, it goes up an octave. It takes all, it moves away from the natural sounds. Life is filled with natural sounds, and one of the natural sounds is power. The power of pain, of anguish, of desperation. That is a natural sound. And it doesn't sound like this. And when love comes through, it doesn't come through like this. It comes through deep, sure, strong, powerful. It doesn't have that quality. You can only know and help if you have embraced. Stand outside of anger, stand outside of jealousy, stand outside, fine. But you will not be a part of mankind, and I assure you, you will not be able to help. You share these common difficulties, and if you lie about them to yourself, good and well, do it now or do it later. People who say they have come to help and refuse to embrace their own dark side are of no help at all. Because I have never known anyone walking the earth that does not have a dark side, unless they are one of those very special and exalted ones. And yes, I will agree to that. But with all due respect, I do not see one of those in this room. I'm speaking of the great ones, the truly great ones, who have come without this trace. So, face it. Embrace it. And if you can, and now we perform heresy, worship it. And now we perform real heresy. Worship it. For those who can hear me, worship it. Because there is nothing different between anger and love. It is all divine energy in motion and worthy of worship. There is nothing that is not worthy of worship, my friend. Put nothing outside. Nothing. Because if you do, it leaves itself unclaimed and waits for you another day. So if depression comes, embrace it and worship it as a part of the one energy, manifesting now as something your mind chooses to call depression. And in that accepting and in that worshiping, all of a sudden, the joy comes. And the closer you are to knowing that, the closer you are to letting it all go. Nothing outside, my friend, nothing. Heresy, I know. But I stand on it. I stand on it. I stand on it.
It sounds like there's no way to go around Maya.
You go through. You go through. You go through every jot and tittle. You go through. And each step you embrace is a less step that you have to travel again. Claim all of it, my friends. Please don't be holy and pious. Holy and pious people are a great pain. They are a great pain, truly. Piety is not one of my favorite. I hope this has answered your question.
Did you have another question?
You make me, Bartholomew, I would like to know if you are ticklish.
No. No. But I certainly do salute the caprice with which it is asked. Wonderful.
We also have a question about Pan.
Ah,
yes. Is there a connection between Pan and the Christ Force?
Mm. I think of all of the great archangels. Whose question? I think of all of the great archangels that one which you call Pan is the most misunderstood and most maligned in the human world. And I suppose if we could be historical, and I suppose that Mr. Moore would know when there was a time in the history of the world when that great force of nature took on a different hue and became some kind of a capricious, sensual flighty, strange, animalistic, goat-smelling kind of a creature. But that is not what Pan is at all. All right. I speak of the archangels, and the reason I use that term is that I think most of you can most align in your mind with that. An archangel is nothing more than an extremely vaulted, dynamic, creative, extending vortex of energy that has a certain movement to it. And you choose to call that vortex of energy Pan. And what it does is it is that energy which brings fruit to the trees, brings life to the leaves, brings life to the soil, which it is that energy that the devas feed upon and which lightens their being into exaltation, and that force is called Pan. Now, if you find yourself out in the wilds, and if you wish to, that force is available to experience, and there is nothing harmful or fearful about it. What it will do is to activate that part of you that is most natural. You know, the human has moved as far away, I shouldn't say that because then you'll move further away, but the human has moved a very great distance away from that which is wondrously, spontaneously natural. And that is why we have so many psychological problems and so forth. It's because you haven't been replenished by this wondrous source of the kinds of power that Pan represents. And if you didn't put yourselves in structures of concrete, if you allowed yourself to live in the naturalness of things, if you made sure that each day your feet were in contact with the earth, not with even synthetic fibers between, if somehow you were able, even in the isolation of a city, to be able to allow yourself to participate in it, you would begin to take on a new strength, because Pan is the strength giver. And if you really want to revitalize a body, instead of putting them in these cubicles and hospitals and shutting the doors and closing the windows and putting on this strange phenomenon called air conditioning, yes. Instead of that, if you would throw open the windows and allow the light to stream in and take the bodies out and put them in the touch with the sun and the wind and the naturalness of things, you would have recuperation a great deal more quickly. And if you were ever ill, I would suggest to you that you go out to the fields and simply lie down. Just lie down. And in the interchange, the earth will feed you and the sun will feed you, and the elements and all will begin to renew. And you don't have to think, my friends. The less you think, the more renewed you will become. But if you go there equipped with your thermos of martinis and your book under your arm, and your book under your arm, and a whole gallery and galaxies of problems that you need to work out in the wild, my friends, you will come back no more replenished than when you went. Leave it all at home. Go where as little as possible without the law transcending on you, and just simply partake of the strength that is there. Surrender to that power. Allow it to give you back that which a false, artificial life has taken from you. Just allow yourself in whatever way is meaningful. I do not think we would have as many mental patients in this world if we would only allow people to go out into the dark, wondrous times of the night and the day, and to lay down and to receive. Pan, or whatever you choose to call that energy, is always there. If there's physical difficulties, go out and lay down. Just lay down. In the interchange of the energy of the soil, in the energy of the trees, in the movements, in all of that, just allow yourself to be a co-participant, no thought, no destination, no expectation, just in allowing, and suddenly, wondrously, the renewal comes, because it is there. But if you go with your mind abuzz, you will simply be going through all that is old, and that is not how Pan can reach you. Pan will never reach you through your mind. The power of Pan is the power of nature, boldly stated, boldly drawn, boldly dynamic, and it will teach you its own lessons, and you don't need to ask any questions, because you don't know what question to ask Pan. How can you question something like that? There is nothing to say. There is only to say, teach me. Teach me. Here I am. I'm yours. Teach me. And each one will learn, each in their own wondrous way. Just teach me. My sorrow is for those who live in the cities and cannot be taught. And my deeper sorrow is for those that live in the country and will not be taught. Does that answer that? My friend, there is no dynamic energy that is not connected. All of the vaultest, the highest, the most dynamic forces of energy do not see themselves as separated off in any way. And if you were to see the vast sweeps of the void, of the trackless sky, if you were to see the energy boundlessly inundating that which you call emptiness, that which I call the fullness, you would understand that there is never any separation. And that which feeds one energy field moves dynamically and creatively into another, and never is there any separation. Never is there any separation. And that is why I have to stand so dynamically on my statement that the Christ is not the only Savior, nor could ever be the only Savior. There is no such thing as a separated Savior. There is only life, giving in abundance to those who are ready to listen. And it comes in every way. It comes through your pores. It comes through your mind. It comes through your heart. It comes through your feet. It comes through your friends. It comes through everything. There is never any place that it is not. It is always there. What is its connectedness? Its connectedness is it has never been separated. A part of the Christ is a part of the Pan experience. You cannot separate them out. When you need to have the Christ experience, that is boldly given. When you need to have the Pan experience, that is there for you. If your mind refuses to accept them together, then you have to choose one over the other. If you say, give it all to me, Lord, I want it all, then you will get it all. But when you slice it off and say, oh no, please, I will only take this one, don't you dare give me that one, then fine, you cannot have that one. But my promise is, open it and just say, please, teach me. Don't, please, don't keep deciding how you're going to be taught. Just say, I'm here. Teach. Teach in whatever way. Teach me. It is you who make the choice of what energy will visit you. And you know you make it all the time. The best time for this kind of teaching, for those of you who are very busy in the world, is at night. One of my major objections to, what is it, the mandala, the...
TV?
Yes.
Television?
Television. One of my main objections to the human mandala of television is that you go in at night and spend some of your most creative hours watching some of the least creative phenomena. And it is through this interchange of watching and then going into your sleep state that you're taking that with you. If you're going to watch it in the morning. Then you have the best chance of blowing it out of your system before nightfall. But to take the most dynamic time of the day, which is from dusk onward, when you are most impressionable, when your psyche is most open, and sit there in front of this machine, I think it's questionable at best as to whether it's at your best interest if your goal is spiritual awakening. Because all of those images are being recorded and yet again recorded and yet again recorded. And I know they're great fun and so forth. Please be discretionary in what you see and what you use and how much you use it. Because be aware that what you do in the dark of night has a great deal of power. And if you want to contact Pan, that is when you can find him. And if you want to contact the Christ, that is when you will find him. because that is when the activity of your end of the earth plane is in its quietude, and that's when the chatter and the noise of all of your combined psyches is hopefully at some kind of a minimum, and the vaster sweeps are then able to touch upon you. But if your mind is filled with all these wonderful dramas that take place on this square box, then that is what you're going to be taught. Make no mistake, my friends, that machine teaches you. Make no mistake, that machine teaches you. Do you really need to learn it? I doubt. I'm not against the machine. I'm simply saying, be aware that each time you turn it on, something is happening. An exchange is being made, somehow. Just be alive to that. There is no separation between the Christ force and that of Pan. None. None. They all move, undulate, carry, and tremendous vortexes of energy far beyond the vastest reaches of your expanded understanding. And the power that they embody is such that you cannot even begin to understand. But when you place yourself at the foot of any of those vortexes of energy, then it takes you, and then you begin to be taught, and then you can begin to learn. Go far enough up in that vortex, and it carries you, and you no longer have to work. But you have to work at the start. That's why you don't.
How do we know when an impression that we receive, shall we say, an intuitive impression, comes from a source which would be worthy of following, or when it comes from, say, the astral plane and probably should not be acted on?
May I change your question a bit? I think that you have to realize that many experiences that you go through, although they end up in a so-called negative state, still have to have been gone through. You cannot judge whether something needs to be gone through, my friend, by the result. You have to judge it by what happens to you while you are going through it. If you are going to be end perceptors and only decide to go through those things that you think are going to end in a way that you have preconceived, then you are going to lose one of the greatest teaching devices that the earth plane has to offer. So, my answer to the question is, if you feel motivated to do something, and you feel dynamically that it is the right thing to do, and you are participating in the moment of it and not being attached to the end of it, then you participate in it, and the teaching and the learning, and if you will, the ending of the karma can take place, and no matter how it ends, the process will have been beneficial to you, and so you end it. Now, the other question which Mr. Moore asked, which I think is extremely valid, is, you understand my answer to you, sir, that just because it doesn't end in a stereotyped way does not mean that it was not absolutely important, dynamic, and essential to your understanding that you participate in it. You were no doubt right to follow your intuitions and do it. Now, the only thing I say is, now do not negate the entire thing by saying it didn't turn out the right way. Because so what? There is no right way. If you could only grasp the wonder of the thought that there is no right way to end anything. There is no right way. There are only ways. And if you could once understand that the problem of your life, so many of your lives, is if things don't end with two people walking arm in arm into the sunset with rose blossoms following, that somehow this is a negative experience. If you could wipe that out of your psyche, you will begin to participate in the fullness and boldness of all of your life. Do you see? I don't care how it ends. I care how you participate. And if you are participating fully and utterly and totally, then I assure you, no matter how it ends, you are learning. You are dropping. And by when I say learning, I mean dropping. To me, the learning process is not accumulating. To me, the learning process is dropping. If you were learning a lot and adding on, then I think you're not learning anything at all. You're simply accumulating. But if what you're doing is dropping, 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 leaving things behind, then I say, at last, you are learning. The more you drop, the more you learn. The more you accumulate, the less you learn. You see, I think it's all backwards. You look on the earth plane, you say, the person that has accumulated the most data is the smartest. And I say, oh, they might be smartest on the earth plane and best able to manipulate the symbol, so I agree with you. But if you're talking to me about wisdom, then I cannot agree with you. And the wisest person to me is the simplest person. was the most devoid of preconceived concepts. That, to me, is a wise person who moves instantly, spontaneously in the moment, and who has dropped past memory. Present is only dynamic when you have dropped your past. And an intellectual cannot drop their past, and you know why? Because they have to be ever ready to answer a question. You never know when somebody is going to ask you a question, and therefore an intellectual has to have the answer ready, because after all, you have something at stake. Your view of yourself as able to answer questions makes you an intellectual. So therefore, you have to have those questions ready. And in order to have the answer ready, you have to have accumulated all that information. Not only do you have to accumulate it, but you have to store it. And please don't ever let any of it ooze out, because you might need it. You never know when somebody is going to ask you that question, and you have to be able to answer. And if you have to say, stupefied, oh my God, I don't know. You have defeated yourself as viewing yourself as a great intellectual. Intellectuals are one thing, wise men are another. And I go with the wise man. And the wise man says, what is. What is before me is. I will not worry. I am here. And this instant has the knowingness for me. And I don't need to know anything, because it's here. Who is there to know? Here it is. It is all here. If all is one, then all is here. What do I need to know? I only need to participate. And how do I participate? I participate by being open. Where? Here. When? Now. 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 So simple.
Sounds childlike.
Of course. Wondrously childlike. Spontaneously, abandonedly childlike. And why not? And why not? Not childish, but childlike. A great deal of difference. Intellectuals have a great chore. I think they've taken on one of the hardest jobs in the universe. To try and keep all that data in some little tiny computer, placed somehow strategically in the middle of a cranium. Very difficult. Very difficult. Did I answer whoever's question that was? I've lost our source. Whose question was it? Thank you. The astral stuff. Yes, included. All right. Now, I think when we talk about the astral, it isn't hard to know an astral. And I would like to give you my rendition of how to identify an astral feeling. It doesn't feel straight. It doesn't feel right. It doesn't feel squared, grounded, and secure. It feels a little funny. It feels a little strange. That, to me, is astral. It may be compelling, it may be exciting, it may be stimulating, but it doesn't feel quite straight. There's something a little bit fuzzy about it. That means that you cannot participate boldly and dynamically with it. You have to move it around a little bit in order to fit it in. Do you understand? You have to kind of skew it around so it works itself into that hole, and then you participate in it. That is my feeling of the astral. And I don't think it's too difficult.
Would you tell us what the answer is?
All right. Well, it is simply... Well, it is simply a mess, is what it really is. And to make it even more complicated, the astral is divided, unfortunately, into lower and higher astral. And this is where I think a lot of so-called spiritual people get very confused, because when you move into the astral realm, it is all that realm of thought forms that remains hovering. And the trouble is, it's not only your thought forms and the thought forms of your family, but in addition to it, it's the thought forms of the entire planet, and not only of the entire planet of those existing now, but, heavens above, the planet and all of its lifetimes of incarnative. It's a great deal. Is that us that has gone off? I have to keep track of which one is ours. All right, so the astral is just a combination of all of the thought forms that have been generated, not only by those living on the earth plane now, but all those that ever have lived on the earth plane, and all and on and on and on. And there it all sits, and it sits in its multicolored, multi-complicated dimension, and it is the one, if you will, that goes, it is directly above that which you call the physical. I mean, it's the next plane up, if you want to talk in terms of up and down. And therefore, it is that realm which oftentimes, if you are on drugs, you're going to hit the astral. And if you are on alcohol, you're going to hit the astral. And when you get there, you're going to have a little trouble. Now, not everybody hits the astral on drugs. There are always those few that can blast right through the astral into the higher realms, yes. But I think even those who fly the highest, eventually on their way down, eventually have to deal with the astral. I think eventually they have to see all of those thought forms. And that is where the fear comes in drugs. That is where the fear comes in the pink elephant and alcohol and all that business. It is just simply the realm of the mind that has created all of the wondrous phenomenon that you have created for so many eons of time. And that is given a name, and the name it is given by humans is called the astral realm. Now, you hit it in sleep. And it is where, it is the realm of the things that you don't understand. It's the realm of the monsters with one arms and one eye and one leg. It's the realm of the strange apparitions. It's the shadowy realm of those things that you can't quite grasp. It's the realm of those things that are creepy and crawly. It's the realm that you probably least like to participate in. Then there is the higher astral, which has a different feeling entirely to it. And in the higher astral, you can come into contact with some very high and lofty thoughts. Because, let us be very frank, not all of the thoughts of mankind have been low. There have been some very wondrously exalted, high-flying, beautiful thoughts. And that you find in the higher astral. So, when you hit that realm, you come into the realm of those dreams that make you feel happier. They pull you up. They give you hope. All right. But then there's that realm of dream that transcends both. And that is what I call the area of the large dream. And I think you know what I'm talking about. Those of you who have a dream that compels you to go back again and yet again to feed from its source, to again and again return to it as a source of hope, courage, inspiration, that is what I call the realm of the big dream. Sculpture comes out of the realm of the big dream. Drawings come out of the realm of the big dream. Healings come out of the realm of the big dream. That's where that is. Just another layer. Does that answer your question about it? It's just an accumulation. When it is stated that an enlightened one does not dream, what they're really saying is that they no longer have to participate in the realm of the astral, high or low. They live and have their being in the realm of the vastness. As you get closer and closer to your goal, one of the things that you will find is that you will probably stop having as many astral dreams. Now, so that I will make something very clear, I would like to state that those of you who are mothers will find, especially new mothers, that you will perhaps have to, for a period of time, out of some willing sacrifice, have in your dream state simply the lower astral. And for that is simply because you are so attuned to the needs of your infant, to your child, that you choose willingly to sacrifice the higher flying of the higher realms of awareness in order to be on call to the needs of your children. And therefore, you will rarely have very dynamic, creative dreams for a period of time, and I salute all of you mothers who have done this on behalf of your children. I salute you. It simply is something that you willingly, totally, and lovingly do, so that your ear is attuned to that they need. If you are in the high vault, it will be extremely hard to come down. Indeed, you might not hear. So therefore, willingly, lovingly, and with total acceptance, you live and dream in the world of the astral. And this is one reason why new mothers have depression. This is one reason why you are prone to depression It even has a wonderful name. What is it called? The baby blues. Yes. And I see where no one in this room is familiar with that. It is nothing very lofty and medical. It is simply psychic. It is the fact that you choose to stay in the realm where you are closest so that you can do your best service. And therefore you remain on those low realms. And you have lost the wondrous ascent to the higher realms, because you see, when you are pregnant, you ascend those realms all of the time. In times of pregnancy, you ascend to those realms. Do you understand? You and child participate in a communion on the higher realms constantly, especially in the last weeks of pregnancy before giving birth. And therefore, the complete change from this wondrous feeling of the vault of the high to now to the realm of the low astral is extremely difficult, and it all comes about so quickly and so suddenly. And this is why I go back to the statement that I made last night. Please, to all of you, give all honor and gratitude to those who were kind enough to bear you into this world to give you an opportunity to be free. They have paid a price. And be grateful. Please be grateful. No medication can take care of that. It is simply a matter of accepting it, understanding it, and willingly saying, so be it. And it will not last forever. Because as soon as you are sure that the child's physical body is strongly enough connected with its spirit body so that it will not fly off too often, then you will feel secure enough to let the child go on its own in its own night travel. And then you are free to travel on your own. Until that time, you will be the sentinel, you will be the sentry, and you will stay. And you will do your job. And thank you. That was just a little aside that I felt should be said. Are there any other questions? Well, if not, then this is our last time together for a while. I would like to say to you, I am very grateful to have come. I am very grateful to have come. Thank you. It has been a wondrous time. I carry you with me. You can never be separated from me. My love is with you and can never be any place else.